some arguments, when you encounter them, you almost kind of feel sorry for the person making the argument. If you can see through what appears to be perhaps superficially a strong statement to the fact that it is flawed, not just flawed, but fatally flawed. A statement like, and have you heard this one? In having a conversation on your Christian convictions with someone, they'll say, well, look, you have your truth, I have truth. No one has absolute truth. There's no such thing as absolute truth. You've heard it, haven't you? And perhaps you've backed away and said, well, you know, I don't know how to respond to that. There is a response. It hardly warrants one, but there is a response. We're talking about discussing your Christian convictions for the last half hour of Issues Etc. today. Welcome back. We're coming to you live this Thursday afternoon, the 19th of February. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our call-in number for the next half hour, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, and our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Listeners with best questions or comments will receive Greg Kokel's new book, Tactics. Greg Kokel is a regular guest president of Stand to Reason based in Signal Hill, California. His new book, Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. Greg, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
So how do you respond to someone who says there's no such thing as absolute truth?
Well, those who have been listening for the last 2 days can anticipate my very first question. And my first question is going to be, what do you mean by that? And I want them to spend a few moments clarifying their meaning when they deny the existence of absolute truth. And I suspect they're going to say something, well, there's nothing that is true in itself. There are just things that people think are true, but there's nothing that's true in itself. And now this prompts my second question. What about your own statement? There's nothing that's true in itself. Do you take that statement to be true in itself? Notice here I'm forcing him with my question now to play by his own rules or to apply the standard that his statement suggests to the statement itself. Now, he's caught in the crossfire here because there's no way he can get out of it. If he says, no, my statement is not true in itself, well, then there's no reason for me to take it seriously. He's making a statement that he's telling me is not true in itself. But if he says, yes, the statement is true in itself, well, then it turns out there are some things that you think are true in itself and therefore absolute. So the statement, there are no absolutes, turns out to be false again. That's because, basically, there's no way that a claim like that can be true. It's necessarily false. Philosophers use that phrase, necessarily false, because what they mean is there's no situation, there's not even a possible world you can imagine in which this statement could be true, because it defeats itself. It commits suicide. And this tendency, then, of some statements to beat themselves up and to commit suicide is what's at the heart of the tactic that I call the suicide tactic.
Well, it sounds like it's not so much a tactic as it is simply being able to recognize a self-refuting argument when you come across one and let it kind of hand it enough rope. So
right.
It can hang itself.
Exactly. I mean, it is a tactic, but the tactic is so simple that it hardly takes any effort. The difficult part is being able to recognize when a view is self-refuting, and sometimes that's a little harder because some self-refuting statements, Todd, are very obvious, like there is no truth. Really, is that a true statement? There are no absolutes, the one you just offered. Well, that's offered usually as an absolute itself. No one could ever know the truth about religion. Okay, well then how did you come to know that truth about religion? You can't know anything for sure. Are you sure about that? You know, these are the kinds of statements that seem to be straight up obviously self-refuting. Some of them are actually funny, and like nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. Well, you know, this is a famous malaprop from Yogi Berra. He's also the guy who said, "I really didn't say everything I said." I mean, these are the kinds of things that when you hear them, you kind of chuckle because they sound kind of silly. My friend Frank Beckwith once said, "I used to believe in reincarnation, but that was in a former life." You know, these are, you see them right away, they self-refute. But sometimes the self-refuting nature of a statement isn't quite so obvious. So the work of this tactic is not in employing it. It's easy to employ it. You point out the contradiction, essentially. Ask a question relating to the contradiction. The harder part is being able to recognize when you have a point of view or an argument that itself is self-contradictory.
All right, then. Where have you ever come across one in your many years of doing this? One that's in the process of committing suicide, but it's difficult to tell. One that is perhaps subtle or more difficult to recognize as self-refuting?
Yeah, here's a simple one that I run across all the time during election season. And this is the idea that God doesn't take sides. And, of course, usually the attempt is for somebody who's probably more on the liberal side of the spectrum to go after the conservative who thinks that God is on his side. And the guy says, well, God doesn't take sides. So you must be mistaken, conservative, to thinking that God's on your side. My question is simply, on this issue of God taking sides, what would be God's attitude about this? And the guy says, well, I just told you, God's attitude, he doesn't take sides. In other words, on the issue of God taking sides, God would agree with you on that issue. Is that correct? Yes. In other words, God would be on your side then, right? So that shows that the view is self-refuting. Apparently, God does take sides. Now, the reason I go through that little exercise is to show that this claim that God, this dismissal that God doesn't take sides, is turns out to be a vacuous and empty kind of dismissal of a point of view. The idea that theistic evolution, that God design things using evolution, I think ultimately plays out in a contradictory fashion. And there's, you know, we can go into a lot of detail on this, but let me just offer the simple thought. Darwinian evolution is also known as the blind watchmaker thesis. This is coming from the book title from Richard Dawkins, the Oxford zoologist, who's probably the best-known evolutionist in the world now. And on evolutionary terms, the process is guided by a blind series of events. There is no guidance involved in evolution. It's the blind watchmaker, and it's natural selection that accomplishes the design, as it were, or the appearance of design. But if you believe that God is involved in the process, then he's a creator. If you're a theist, then God is involved, and therefore God is not blind. So how can you have God involved in directing a blind process? That's what it amounts to if you believe, I think, in theistic evolution, that the sighted watchmaker is directing a blinded process or design by chance. And design by chance is a contradiction in terms. And therefore, I think theistic evolution, in the normal ways that it's characterized, fails in virtue of contradiction and falls victim to the suicide tactic.
Why not? We've got a few minutes here before our first break. Why not simply deftly demonstrate at the outset that someone's viewpoint, a statement like this, is self-contradictory and self-refuting? Why, as you said, employ Columbo at this point and say, what do you mean by that? Why explore if you can see already that there's not much there?
Right. Well, remember the title of the book is Tactics. So what we're talking about is the most effective and deft way to maneuver for the sake of being persuasive. When you and people don't change their minds easily, okay? And so we have to be aware of natural resistance. When we ask questions, we get commitments to particular things, which are steps along the way towards showing a person that his view is wrong. If we simply declare that their view is self-refuting, well, then, you know, they may try to resist and try to get out of it in some way. And it's amazing what people say to deny the self-refuting nature of their own views. You'd think it would be obvious, but for some it isn't. And I find that, tactically speaking, Todd, it just is easier to go step by step, if we can, using questions to reveal the self-refuting nature of a person's view.
Folks, here's your chance to get Greg Kokel's new book, Tactics. We're giving away several copies to listeners with the best questions or the best comments. Call or email during this break. Our phone number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or you can email us right here in the studio this Thursday afternoon, the 19th of February, talkback@issuesetc.org. Talkback@issuesetc.org. Greg Kokel is president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, author of the new book, Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk to Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse about the unmarried California woman who gave birth to octuplets via in vitro fertilization. That's tomorrow on Issues, Etc. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the suicide tactic, or these arguments that kind of do it for you. They put themselves to a merciful death, and then Greg calls it taking the roof off. It's an interesting way of putting it, but what does it mean? Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. A couple years ago, I was driving down the road and reading the bumper stickers of the cars that were passing me by, one directly in front of me at a stoplight. It was an interesting bumper sticker. I'm interested in the ones that mentioned God. It said, "My God is too big to fit into your religion." I think I just talked with Greg that day, and I realized, well, there's a self-refuting argument, too. We'll find out why after this. Greg, I saw that bumper sticker I mentioned before the break. "My God is too big to fit into your religion." Mm-hmm. And I imagine a lot of people read it and say, "Wow, yeah, that's awesome."
Yeah.
Is it a self-refuting argument?
Yeah, I think it is, but it's not obvious initially. Basically, what the person is saying, and again, this becomes more clear when you start probing with questions, what do you mean by that, is they're saying, look, you have your religious box. That is your little definition of God. And God can't be fit into or restrained by religious definitions. The problem with that claim is the claim itself is a box. That is, it's a religious definition, it's a theological statement about what God is like, and it by necessity then excludes things that are contradictory to it. So for all the professions that theological claims about God are wrong and they restrict God or they put God in a box, this itself turns out to be a theological claim about God that of necessity is going to restrict God in some way. And what I mean by restrict here is not like keep him from doing what he wants to do, but in a sense provide some definition for what God is like and what his purposes are. Well, that's exactly what other religions are meant to do as well. The question isn't whether or not we have God in a box after a fashion. The question is whether the box that we have him in, that is the theological descriptions that we have of God, is accurate or not. And it seems like that challenge on the bumper sticker is guilty of the same kind of restriction after a fashion that it's complaining about with other religious folk.
Marie in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, emails us, and she says, "I have heard the argument that there's no such thing as absolute truth quite often since coming to college. I try to point out that that statement is itself an absolute and therefore self-refuting. Usually
right.
I get the answer that maybe there's absolute truth, but maybe there isn't, but it is impossible to know for certain. They also claim that if there is absolute truth, it is arrogant to claim to know what that truth is. This is usually the point in which I get stuck. Where do I go from there?" she says.
Well, if they claim that it's not possible to know for certain, that doesn't get them out of their problem, because when they say, "Well, maybe there is truth, but we don't know. We can't know it." Then the same question that I ask about the first thing, I ask about the second. Is that something you know? Apparently, it sounds like we can't know truth, but do you know that you can't know truth? Now, if you know that you can't know truth, then that's a truth that you know. It almost sounds like double talk, but it's not. It's very straightforward. Every time people make a claim, they are claiming something to be true that they think they know to be true. And so that's why it makes them very difficult when the claim that they're claiming that they know to be true is that we can't know anything to be true. The second challenge, though, is, well, if you think you know the truth, then you're arrogant. And there's a couple different ways you can go with that. One of them is arrogance wrong? Well, it sounds like they think it is, so I presume they're going to say, yes, it is. Well, I thought you said you couldn't know anything true, and now you're saying it's true that arrogance is wrong. Not only are you saying it's true that arrogance is wrong, but you're saying I'm the one that's guilty of it, so now you're judging me. So how would you respond to that? So there's the question. That's another kind of a problem with that way of looking at it. But simply put, though, I would ask the question, why is it arrogant when you think you're right about something? Why is that arrogant? So I think I know some truth. I've pondered. I've reflected. I've done the best that I could, and I've come to a conclusion. Now, I could be mistaken on my conclusion for the sake of discussion, but I don't know why thinking you've come to an accurate conclusion is an example of arrogance. Because if it is, then you've just come to the conclusion that anyone who thinks they've come to an accurate conclusion is arrogant. So that would make you arrogant too, wouldn't it? Again, the suicide tactic in play.
Jeffrey in Grand Haven, Michigan, how do you deal with the moral relativist who depends on his point of view?
Well, I guess that depends on exactly what they're saying. The problem with moral relativism is that most people who claim to be relativists don't actually believe in relativism. And this is really obvious. I mean, there's an example in the book where I talk about this, a guy who's complaining that I'm judgmental. And I said, what's wrong with that? He said, well, you know, it's wrong to judge. He's coming from a relativistic perspective. But now he's just claimed a moral truth. It's wrong to judge. And I said, Gil, if it's wrong to judge, why are you judging me right now? Well, he didn't realize that he had been doing the very thing that he claimed I shouldn't be doing. And so he got back thinking about it for a little bit, and he said, okay, yeah, I guess I was judging. All right. Well, it's okay to judge, but you can't push your morality on other people. And I said, Gil, is that your morality? Notice there's a question for clarification. Is that your moral point of view that you shouldn't push morality on other people? And he said, yes, and he didn't see what was coming. I said, Gil, if that's your moral point of view, why are you pushing it on me right now? And once again, he was stymied because he kept doing the very thing that he said I shouldn't be doing. That is, telling me what's right and wrong. And a moral relativist do that all the time. And this is an example of what I call practical suicide. It's not self-refuting in its very nature. It's not contradictory in its nature, but it can't be put into practice. Because the minute you put this rule on somebody else, you end up violating it yourself.
What is taking the roof off? We've got about two or three minutes here before we need to wrap up.
Okay. Taking the roof off is a phrase that came from Francis Schaeffer. And basically, if you think about worldviews are like maps. If you've got a bad map and you follow the map, you might fall off the highway or something, like drive off a cliff if your map isn't accurate. And the concept of taking the roof off trades on this notion. People's worldviews, their views of reality, if they're not accurate, can lead them to dismal ends. Like the person who says there is no morality. Well, if there is no morality and we take that seriously, then it turns out that we can never judge anything wrong. Even a child torture or egregious, genocide or something like that. Now, it seems that those things are wrong, but we'd have to say there aren't wrong if relativism is true. That means there's something wrong with relativism. And so what you do is you take the view as true for the sake of discussion, and then you carry it out to its logical conclusion. If the conclusion is absurd, then there must be something wrong with where you started. And the reason that Schaeffer called this taking the roof off is that when we show people the consequences of their own faulty worldview, we take away their protection. They feel safe in denying the Christian worldview, and they've built this little structure to make them feel safe. We take that off. We take the roof off. We let the cold wind blow, and we show them that the consequences of their rejection of God and of Jesus turn out to be dismal, and there's something wrong with that. And when then we offer them the only reasonable alternative, faith in Christ and participating in God's world in his kingdom.
Greg, very, very briefly, tomorrow we'll conclude our series with you, and
sure,
the tactics will be Rhodes Scholar, Just the Facts, Ma'am, and More Sweat, Less Blood. What's in store for us tomorrow with about 30 seconds?
Well, a lot of people get hit with challenges. Well, scholars say this, and it's against what you think. And well, how do we deal with that? That's a Rhodes Scholar, and I'll talk about the tactic, how that's employed. Just the facts, ma'am, trades on the notion that some people just get their facts wrong when they're objecting to Christianity, like the so-called fact that religion and bloodshed has caused more pain and, I'm sorry, religion has caused more pain and bloodshed and murder than anything else in the world. And then, of course, more sweat, less blood is the encouragement to do your homework, and then you'll get less beaten up on the battlefield, so to speak. So we'll talk in more detail about those things tomorrow.
Greg Kokel is president of Standard Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, author of the new book. It's called Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. You'll find information on tactics at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Look forward to tomorrow, Greg. Thanks for being our guest.
I do, too. Talk to you then.
Marie in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and Jeffrey in Grand Haven, Michigan, send us an email with your mailing addresses, and we'll send you a copy of Greg's book, Tactics. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss the unmarried California woman who gave birth to octuplets via in vitro fertilization, bringing her total number of children to 14. Our guest tomorrow, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris. I said at the beginning, these things hardly warrant a response, a self-refuting argument, but a response is necessary. Even though the arguments are bogus, paper thin, and with very little to stand on, most of them nothing to stand on, and it would be very easy simply to hand them the rope, let it loop the rope around their neck and let them kick the chair out from under themselves very quickly, perhaps painlessly. But then what have you won? Remember, the goal, as I said yesterday here, is to win the brother. The goal here is not to win the argument, but to win the other. And that means even when someone presents you with something that's totally bogus, self-refuting, in the process of committing logical suicide, we are still honest, we are still gentle, we still speak the truth in love. And so we will ask the questions, and we'll help them to see that the position that they have taken, whether they meant it to be or not, simply doesn't make sense. You know, it's a good thing about the truth. The truth makes sense. And when something doesn't make sense necessarily, that doesn't mean it isn't true. We ought to have our eyes open for it. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow, and thanks for listening to Issues Etc.